Hi, welcome to the Stark Naked Report for November 3rd, 2008. I'm Clinton.
And this is Lonnie.
Stark. So we had a really busy week. We were traveling.
We were down in Loretto this weekend, and that was, I think, the highlight of the week.
So we'll talk about what we saw there, the construction, some of the things we did in the town of Loretto. And we have three other things, I think, also for this show. Eller's Wine Harvest Party in Napa, the Harley-Davidson Museum in Milwaukee, and an update on solar and credits for 2009.
Yeah, some really good incentives as part of the $700 billion bailout plan. So hopefully some good things coming out of a less than desirable economic situation.
Okay, so why don't we start first with the Eller's Wine Harvest Party. We were in St. Helena, which is in Napa Valley. We're wine club members of Eller's Estate, which is one of our favorites.
Yes, I mean, we belong to about three wine clubs, and we try to keep it to that level just because, you know, wine clubs are one of those things you can start to join a lot of and start getting wine shipments every day. As wonderful as that sounds, it could fill up our wine cellar pretty quickly. But Eller's, I think, is just a special winery. We actually visited it when it hadn't finished its renovation, so it was still just a barn. And it was started actually with being a nonprofit, and it still is, for cardiovascular research and international.
Right. So the profits, I think it's a nonprofit.
Yeah.
So the proceeds go to this research.
Yes, it's the LeDuc Foundation. So it has a good beginning, and also it's a small winery. A lot of the wineries in Napa are now being owned or bought up by these large companies, and it's good on one sense because wineries cost a lot to operate. And it's nice to see that infusion of cash to the California area to make sure that our wines are of good quality.
Although it's not so great sometimes when they're non-U.S. based foreign companies.
Yeah, although U.S. companies invest in other areas too. I think it's just the diversity in the different styles of wines. So I think the general idea of rooting for the underdog. So definitely see Eller's as being a small little gem in Napa, actually in the St. Helena region, right?
Right, in the Napa Valley, but in the city of St. Helena. Yeah, which, so we had an invitation in the mail. We went there, it was a lunch, harvest party. And there was about, how many people would you say were there?
And about 60. And the actual invite was pretty low key. And, unlike other wineries, they actually offered it as a complimentary party for its wine club members, which actually they just launched the wine club last year. So it's a fairly new wine club. They have two levels, the emissary and the ambassador. We're emissary members, which means we get half a case a year to taste. And then how it works is that you get 2 months to purchase any of the wine for 30% off, which is quite a nice discount, actually, by most Napa Wine Club standards. And the ambassador one, I've considered joining.
Ambassador, so that's the notch up.
Yes.
There's 100 people on that one, right?
It's limited to 100 people.
Is there 100
now? There's 70 right now.
70 right now?
Yeah. It's limited to 100. And the thing is, you have to commit to 3 cases of wine as a base level.
Yeah, so plus all the other wine clubs we belong to, that's a lot of wine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Most people that did it, at least the family that we spoke to at the wine harvest party, they split it with other family members. So that's how you sort of get through 3 cases of wine without becoming a complete lush.
Right. And an interesting thing about Eller's, they also recently renovated their barn. It used to be really barn-like. It still is. It's got a nice charm to it.
Yeah.
So they renovated. It looks great. And then for this particular one, they had a great lunch, which was catered.
It was by basically a company that has done a paella contest with Bobby Flay. I forgot what it's called.
Throwdown with Bobby
Flay? Throwdown. So for all of you HDTV fans, or not HDTV, sorry, Food Network TV.
I can tell what channels you watch.
Fans, Bobby Flay does a sort of competition, and so they won it, and they are crowned the paella kings, and it was quite impressive. They had these huge drums where they made the paella, and when it was done, it looked beautiful. They had great layout of seafood and everything else. And you can see a picture of it, actually, on Stark Silver Creek.
Right. And then the other thing we should mention is they previewed the wine. They have a new blend, 120 over 80.
Yes.
Which is a blend, red wine blend. And they had that on hand too, so we had a chance to sneak preview that wine.
Which we'll get in our shipment next year.
We'll get in our shipment next year. I thought it was pretty good, so...
Yeah, it was, and it was basically it's exclusively offered to wine club members, so that's kind of nice. It makes it makes you feel special, and we're really rooting for the winery. We hope it continues, and I know Mario actually worked really hard on the harvest party, and it was a great success. I thought
everyone
had a lot of fun.
One more thing, yeah, Maria was great, and they have a new winemaker who came from Screaming Eagle.
Yes,
but we met him there
yes.
as well. And he's been there for about a month and a half.
Yeah, he's been there for a month and a half. And it was funny, we talked a little about Screaming Eagle. I'm actually on their waiting list, which I hear, well, I thought it was 5 years long, but it turns out it's a little longer than that. But I figured if I'm on it now, then one day.
It's kind of like building a home in Loretto. You might as well start now.
Touche, touche. But right now I hope I don't get up there because Screaming Eagle is quite a pricey wine.
You need to start saving now so
yes.
when you do get accepted.
Yes. And I'll admit that I'm a big sort of wine collector in the sense that I like things that are rare. So if you tell me I can't get it, then I will chase it down. So I'm not even sure if I really want to drink it.
Maybe it's a little bit of marketing.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
is there anything else about Ehlers? I think we've covered that. It was a great event.
Yeah.
Great wine. It's on the blog.
Oh, the Starkey.
Okay, so we're going to switch gears now and literally and talk about Harley Davidson. You were in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I was actually there. It was the opening event for the National Association of State CIOs annual conference. It was held in Milwaukee, and they had the first evening's party at the Harley-Davidson Museum, and it was great because during the whole evening, you could stroll to the actual museum and take a tour of the whole entire place. And it was, I'm not a biker, or I don't have this...
You're not?
No, I'm not. but it was still really exciting seeing all the bikes, and I actually bought a t-shirt and a belt from Harley Davidson, just so that I could actually get into the mood for this event.
And it's interesting because when you think of Harley Davidson, it's actually one of the biggest brands in the world. Business Week does a top 100 brands every year, and has McDonald's, Starbucks, IBM, some of the biggest brands in the world, and Harley Davidson always is near the top of the list. So
yes.
they're an American success story.
They are, and I even had a fake tattoo on my arm. So I was really getting into the spirit. And it was really interesting because at this event, you had a lot of CIOs and professionals that were in suits and seemed really conservative. And then, you had this event, and all of a sudden, you see people donned in their Harley gear. And you could tell just who are the sort of closet Harley Davidson fans because you say the word Harley, it's a Harley event.
So
and
they just wanted to wait all day and take off their business casual.
Actually, some of them even started wearing it during the day.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
Well, that's funny because when you see a Harley, a lot of the time it's a lawyer or a doctor or a CEO. And
yeah,
it's really...
I think it's not just a bike. I mean, I think Harley's done a great job of sort of the whole lifestyle, the experience. Even though I wasn't actually riding a Harley out in Milwaukee, just having the outfit on and sitting on the stationary bikes, it just made me feel like I was free, I was rebellious, and I thought, maybe I'll just buy a bike and ride all the way down to Loretto.
Gosh, this sounds like a bit like a movie called Easy Rider, Peter Fonda.
Okay.
Well, and there's something else interesting that's a movie, maybe you don't know about that movie.
when was it made?
Yeah, in the 60s.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay, so there's a book, too. When I was reading your story and you're looking at your blog post about Harley Davidson, there's a book actually called Well Made in America, and it came out, I think, in the early 90s, but many people, you probably don't know, but actually Harley Davidson almost went bankrupt in the early 80s. They had tens of millions of dollars of debt, and they almost shut the doors on the company. And what happened is some of the employees bought the company and turned it around. And this book, Well Made in America, actually documents that turnaround. And the way they did it actually is they used the loyal fan base that Harley has, very loyal people who love the bike and the brand, and used that. And the other thing that they used was the actual unique exhaust note of the Harley Davidson. If you've ever been at the red light and a Harley Davidson's pulled up to you, you feel the rumble of the ground next to you. That's a very unique thing. And that's part of the Harley-Davidson brand. And the Japanese, who were competitive with Harley at the time, could not replicate that sound. So they used that to turn the company around. So anyways, I would recommend that book. Excellent story about how American company went up against the world competition and to this day is doing very well.
Thanks, Professor Stark. You took a very exciting, wrenching sort of...
Oh, it was really heart-wrenching.
Exciting experience at the Harley-Davidson Museum, and you turned it into a brand management class. Thanks. But I think we can relate to that whole part around passionate owners of the bikes and pulling some sort of company from near bankruptcy to an ultimate success. Perhaps we'll see something like that with Loretta Bay.
Very insightful. So let's leave it at that, and let's shift gears again and talk about green and solar. You've been blogging a lot about solar. We put a system in place earlier this year on our house.
Yes, I think I dragged you into it, that kicking and screaming. For those of you that don't follow this, so Clint and I championed two different projects starting actually last year as we sort of planned out our fiscal 2007 and 2008 investments.
Yeah, I know where this is going.
And so his was the home theater, which he was able to get early on, and I had to really push to finally get the solar panels in place, which are going to, I think, in the long run, have a better investment/payback period. In fact,
although when you're on the couch and we're watching Dancing with the Stars, it doesn't seem like you're that against the home theater.
So we'll leave it at that, and what we really want to talk about was the update to
the look I get.
The 2009 sort of solar energy tax credit for residents, and it's a federal program.
You're going to talk about the program that we had when we put ours in. It's changing for 2009, right?
Yeah, that's the part I'm getting to. Clint.
Okay, sorry. I thought I had to say something there.
So 2009, so the federal program.
Yes.
The federally run program. Well, you just let me talk.
Okay.
So federal program, before it was basically residents who purchased solar panels to substitute for their electrical needs. Instead of getting it just from PG&E or wherever your local electricity company was, you would get federal credits up to 30% of your cost of your solar panels, but it was capped at $2,000. And for any of you have explored installing solar panels, you'll know that to really zero out on your usage, you need a system that's about $25,000, $30,000 as a baseline. And so for most homeowners, the $2,000 was way below the 30%. And as of the beginning of next year,
2009,
that $2,000 cap is removed. So, for example, for a $30,000 system, you're looking at federal tax credits of about $10,000, and that's significant. And it's all based on your date of operation. So, unfortunately, for those that got their system prior to next year, you were limited, and unfortunately, it's not grandfathered in. But, you still were able to get a great system. I think the numbers, the payback period is still good, even on a system that was subject to that $2,000
cap. I think this is a good thing, right? Because it's going to mean more people will probably opt to go for a system, right? The more the government contributes to the cost of putting in a new system.
Yeah, I hope that it also starts to really fuel some serious investment and innovation in solar panel energy. There's been some improvements over the last decade around solar energy, but ultimately the whole technology behind the current solar panels is the same, and the level of efficiency in the conversion of solar rays to electricity isn't that great. So hopefully this will infuse some money into the solar energy industry and really bring on this whole wave of green technology. One of the things actually is Now I forgot what I was going to say. You're making funny faces.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it was like the hybrid. You know, it's interesting because the government incentives usually start out very strong and then go on a declining scale. You know, the hybrid, they offered a good incentive and then it goes down over time. So I'm just surprised that, and this is a good thing actually, that they've actually increased the incentive for solar. So that's good.
I think there was a lot of lobbying, and also this is all funded by the $700 billion bailout plan that is in place. So part of that $700 billion bailout is actually going to fuel this alternative energy effort, and that's great.
You know, it's interesting because T. Boone Pickens, and you've written about him before on our blog, he is a billionaire, and he's investing, you know, a lot of his personal money in wind farms through the middle of the United States. So, you know, I think between tax incentives, which I think is a great idea with the government, they should do more of that, and these billionaires, you know, people putting their money behind these large investments in solar and green and wind, it's a great move. So hopefully we'll see, you know, we see a lot of hybrids in California. I think one out of four hybrids are sold in California. So I think this is a good move.
Yeah. By the way, I haven't actually read the Pickens plan, so I don't know if I support his plan.
You saw his commercial, and then you didn't read the plan yet, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, I made a sort of funny comment.
And, yeah. Who the Dickens is Pickens?
Yes, I was quite proud of that title for my blog. I actually, it was one of my moments of inspiration of writing a blog entry. I just thought that title was just funny.
Perfect. Okay, so for our last, segment, I guess we could call it, we're going to talk about Loretto. We were just there. We spent 4 days. We did our Thursday
to Sunday trip.
Which I think we've done every time now.
Yeah, we always want to stay a little longer, but the whole irony of Loretto is that you buy a piece of paradise, but then you realize you've got to work to keep that piece of paradise.
The vision, right? So,
yes.
I mean, we bought a couple of years ago. So every time we go, we're very excited to see what's going on in the development. There's been a lot of news recently, and we cover it pretty closely, I think, because we're quite passionate about it. It's a beautiful area.
Yeah.
It's on the Sea of Cortez. Loretto is a beautiful town. It's about 10,000 people. And so this time we went down. And where do you want to start first? Do you want to talk about construction or do you want to talk about...
Yeah, a little bit about construction. But just I think what was different about this trip was we also spent quite a bit of time in the actual town of Loretto, and also with some of our friends, such as Jane and Sharon, and we actually went to a Halloween party as well, which was a lot of fun. But it kind of, as we near the completion of our home, I think we're sort of switching modes of not just looking at construction, but what life will be like after our place is built, which is something that's important to think about.
Well, it's an interesting point, because I think for the first time ever, we really felt connected with the community that's happening there. There's a lot of people living there, a lot of people spending time.
Yeah.
And there's this real feeling, like when you walk down the street of the Paseo, you can actually, you'll run into a lot of people that you recognize and know now.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. And of course, we did hang around with Sharon and Jane, who are, I would say, social butterflies. So it was fun hanging out with them and bumped into a lot of folks that we got to meet, and other familiar faces as well. And it was just a lot of fun because everyone that you meet has an interesting story. The local businesses in Loretto, some really colorful characters.
There is. I mean, everyone comes from a different part of the country, a different part of the world, and they were attracted to, but the common denominator is being attracted to Loretto for the same reason. I mean, I think it's beautiful. It's full of people who have passion for life and so forth. And so that's a lot of fun. So when we got on the ground, we went into Loretto Bay. We're always wondering, what do the roads look like? How much construction progress has been made?
Yeah.
You know, so what were your impressions when we first drove in to Loretto?
Well, I was actually surprised by the extent of the construction. So there had been a lot of sort of concerns about where construction progress was. So I was interested to see that it wasn't just certain clusters that were started. The further north you drive along Agua Viva, there's a lot of construction happening across the board.
And it actually goes pretty far.
Yeah, it does. And you really start to, before you really had to imagine the vision that David Butterfield had, but now you're starting to see the extent of the development. It's pretty impressive, I think, and the canals and everything else.
The estuaries and the canals. And so in our particular unit, we saw in our cluster, we're close to the, how would you describe our location? I mean, we're near the botanical, what would have been the, I'm not sure, it's maybe botanical gardens near the Bat Cave or the convention center.
Yeah, it's a little south of the Bat Cave. And there's, I mean, lots of maps on our Stark Silver Creek of where we are.
Right, yeah,
so I don't think that's any secret. But we were really impressed with the progress that had been made and finally seeing the issues that we were told were addressed, but actually seeing it in the constructed site was great. And there were just a lot of workers there and, you know, just really grateful that everyone's working so hard to make, you know, all of our dreams, I think, a reality.
Yeah, and I think the communication might be better now between, you know, we submitted this RFI that everyone got this form. We filled it out with some issues we had. And it seemed like, when we got down there, that they addressed those issues completely. And so it wasn't a matter of fact of going through Arizona and then through Loretto. It seemed like on the ground there was a really good flow of information happening. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think just as a tip for just homeowners, because I have been on different sites where people have had different mixed experiences with it, definitely try to help out Loretto Bay in the transition from the Arizona office to the local offices by what we did, at least, and I think it was helpful, was not only provide the RFI, but also provide any sort of information, summarize any communication, decisions that were made, all into a package for our new account rep, so that they had all the information there.
And I think sometimes less is more, you know, so you don't have to necessarily go into all the history, but be very use clean, simple language also, because language could also be an issue.
And definitely just, you know, all the documents of record, make sure you send over. So that's what we did, and at least I think it helped in the making sure that things are transitioned.
So I guess we could say our bottom line was that we were pleased with what we saw, and that there was a lot of people working on it, things were happening.
Yeah, I think construction is one of those things where you really need to see it. So we did take a lot of photos, and as soon as we sort through the 4 gigs, I think, of photos we took in Loretto, we'll start posting up the information, and we'll start with the things that are timely, and we have some photos of the La Mission Hotel as well.
Well, and good say. Let's talk about the town then of Loretto, what's happening there, what we saw. First thing I noticed where the streets were done. Well, we hadn't been there for a while, so I guess they've been done for a while. Most of the streets have been repaved, and they're very nice, actually. They're much more walkable now. I think it's a nice look. There's a few that are still dug up a little bit, and they're still working on
them. I think there's more than a few, Clint.
The ones going down the Malecon? Yeah, but it was certainly better than last time we were down.
I think some of the roads, especially the main streets, had been paved, but the street in front of La Palapa was restaurant was all dug up, and it was somewhat unfortunate because their Palapa burned down recently, and actually all the workers helped to rebuild that, and just when they finished rebuilding that, the
now
front
they have
of
a
their
torn up street.
Exactly, their street is torn up. So, but we talked to some of the locals, and it has a real good following of people that enjoy eating there. So I think they're going to hang in there until the street's paved.
Right, and so I think we had a great time walking around the streets. We hit some restaurants, as we do every time, down the Malecon and also downtown. So we'll talk about this later on our blog. I think we had a chance to take in a timeshare presentation by Villa Group, which is interesting.
Yeah, and it was actually sort of planned. I mean, when we went down, we had seen a lot about these sort of developments, and so we wanted to actually attend one of those presentations. And of course, I'm one of those folks that likes to sort of compare developments as well, and so we actually went to a presentation done by the Villa Group.
Yeah, and fortunately, some of their sales tax a little bit aggressive, you know, the guys at the airport and the guys on the streets.
They were.
You know, sometimes I don't like that part of it, but This time we were approached by some people on the path that were pretty nice.
Yeah, it's one thing to watch it. I mean, we were interested in a presentation, but definitely if you get approached by someone that's trying to provide you with information, tourist information, some of them even have sort of somewhat misleading signs. So definitely right. As you're walking by, if you don't want to attend a session, make sure you let them know. But we were actually interested in taking one for the team and going to one of these presentations. So what's happening is they are offering timeshares, which are floating, and you basically get 1 week or 2 week slot. But their actual full ownership, the information is not going to be around till 2010. We collected some information, so we'll be writing a blog entry, I think, around...
Yeah, and Villa Group owns timeshares in Cabo San Lucas, in Puerto Vallarta, in Nueva Vallarta. I think they have a new one going on there too. So, and I think part of the economy, there's a meltdown going on, obviously. And so I think what they're trying to do is take advantage of, obviously, they're very bite-sized, easily digestible pieces of these timeshares.
Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of the time, I think they take a credit card and try and put it on there. For me, I'm not a big fan of the timeshare. We've talked about this. It's not for me. I like ownership.
Yeah.
You know, so
I can't get over this idea of timeshares.
The 30-year lease thing.
Yeah, the 30-year lease. But that's just a personal preference. I mean, maybe it's the idea of owning the cement and owning the land, and there's something very tangible
right.
about that.
It's real, and yeah, it's like almost like leasing a car versus owning a car. I don't know if that's exactly the same analogy. And then
it actually isn't.
Okay,
real estate appreciates, cars depreciate.
Well, I said it's like.
I wouldn't mind actually having a timeshare on a car, but because it's a depreciable. Yeah, it's a depreciable asset, so I would definitely consider that.
And so they had a breakfast for us at the top of the Flores Hotel, where we went and had a buffet.
Yeah.
And then we went through the timeshare presentation. It was about 90 minutes. And they do, they do a little bit of the car salesman technique near the end.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about it in our entry.
And that was that. And then you had a spa and some stuff they give you at the end. Okay, so I think that wraps up our discussion on Loretto. We have a lot of photos. We've had videos to go through, about 4 gigabytes actually this time.
Yeah, quite a bit to run through, but a lot of great updates and photos as usual. We'll start posting up on our site as soon as we can rummage through them.
And there's one more thing, I guess, before we end off this report, would be the calendar 2009 for Loretto. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so it's for some of you old-timers that remember starting from Loretto, a couple of years ago, Loretto Bay actually sent out a calendar. And this year, obviously, 2009 coming up, we thought, hey, maybe it'd be great to have a Loretto calendar. And then Clint and I just started talking about it, and we thought, why not just create one? And then we thought maybe we'd tie it to some charity, because we thought that would be a good sort of thing to do for the holidays.
Right.
And while we were down in Loretto Bay, we actually spoke to Jane, who mentioned Animalandia, which is a great charity that quite a number of the Loretto Bay homeowners are involved in. So we thought, hey,
Lori
from TCC Loretto, and a couple of others as well. And they have their website as well, and that we'll post up. But we thought it would be great to tie together a Loretto 2009 calendar with net proceeds going to this charity. So we'll be posting up the details on Stark Silver Creek. But right now, based on current costs, we're hoping to be able to donate about $9.
Yeah, we're just going to take the net. Anything we make, any money profit we make above our cost, we'll go to this charity.
Yeah.
We'll go to Animalandia. Is that how you say it?
Animalandia. Yes.
Okay, good. Well, that's great. So hopefully people will like the calendar. We took some kind of classic Loretto pictures that are in there, but also some photos that are kind of interesting, that show off some of the interesting characters.
Yeah, I think a lot of us like the quirkiness sometimes of Loretto. And so instead of just being a standard calendar, I mean, we have some beautiful shots of standard Loretto.
And there were so many. That was the hard part.
Things, yeah.
So many beautiful
photos.
But
we also have some quirky things we see that brings up a smile to your face as well, I think. And so we put them all together in this calendar, and we hope you enjoy it. We think it'd make great stocking stuffers. And for those of you who are crazy about Loretto or know friends who are are trying to get people to come
down. Promote the area.
Yeah, to promote the area. And it's for a great cause. So anyways, you'll see more information on our website.
Good work on that. So anyways, that's the end of our first Stark Naked Report. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time. I'm Clint.
And this is Lonnie Stark.